Good to be here tonight. We are in Genesis 25. Towards the end there, Genesis chapter 25. We saw a number of things last week, including that of the birth of Jacob and Esau. And a very significant birth that was, a very prophetic birth, and as far as how it came to be, and how the two were born, being prophetic, but also what the Lord had said to Rebekah in terms of why there was a war going on within her womb. And the fact that God told her she had two nations in her womb, and that the older, the firstborn, that is, would end up serving the younger. And we saw that Esau was like a hairy garment all over when he came out. He came out red, and we see that Esau became a skillful hunter in verse 27. He was a man of the field. Jacob, on the other hand, lived a completely different life than that, being a mild man dwelling in tents. And we see that there was some division within the household as Isaac, their father, loved Esau because he liked to eat of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. So you know that's going to be a problem, and definitely will be. And I think, depending on exactly how far we get today, we'll see how that continues to be a problem with Isaac's, how Isaac prefers Esau, and when the time comes for blessings to be given out, we're going to see especially how that becomes an issue. Now, we'll also see it with Rebekah as well, with some of the things she does. Now, verse 29 says, "Now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. And Esau said to Jacob, 'Please feed me with that same red stew, for I am weary.' Therefore his name was called Edom. But Jacob said, 'Sell me your birthright as of this day.' And Esau said, 'Look, I am about to die, so what is this birthright to me?' Then Jacob said, 'Swear to me as of this day.' So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. Then he ate and drank, arose, and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright." All right, so this is certainly a critical moment. And you know it's got to be a critical moment, even if we don't recognize that right away. Anytime someone is given a change of name, it is because of a very critical and significant situation that happens. And that's what happens here with Esau, where he becomes known as Edom, and it has to do with that red stew. All right? And so him asking for that red stew, and the word Edom means red, him requesting that red stew, and that day in which he requested that red stew is the day that would change the history of the world. It's a day that would change Esau's life and Jacob's life, and it was a significant moment, certainly a greater fulfillment even of the prophecy that which God had revealed earlier, much earlier, when these two were in the womb. And But also not just when they were in the womb and God talked about how the older would end up serving the younger, but also remember when they came out, we see that in verse 26 that Jacob, coming out of the womb, takes hold of Esau's heel, right? So it's kind of very fascinating, illustrating the idea that he is going to trip up Esau. He's grabbing his heel to trip, and that's the point of his name. His name Jacob. It means a supplanter, a deceiver. All right, one who's going to sneakily put his foot out as the other walks by and cause the other one to stumble and fall to the ground. That is the meaning of the name Jacob. And his parents gave him that name because of what they saw as he was coming out of the womb of all time. So from the very beginning of their lives, we see that he was one that was to cause his brother to stumble and fall. And we're seeing it playing out here in the text, where this is a momentous occasion in which Esau stumbles to the ground. And Jacob, he's a deceiver and he's a tricker, and he's a sneaky one. And I think we should recognize that about Jacob here in the text, because notice what Jacob is doing here when Esau comes in, and you know he's very hungry. You know, according to him, he's starving. I'm sure he could go many more days without food personally, but you know how people say that nowadays. I get that from at home. You know, in between lunch and dinner, I'm starving, the kids will say, and every time I say no, you're not starving. You don't know what starving is. And but at any rate, he comes in. I'm starving. I'm about to die. Well, highly doubt it. Nevertheless, Jacob takes advantage of the situation. Let's recognize here that what Jacob does here is not kind. You know, and it's not good. As he sees his brother in need, he sees his brother suffering here in hunger, and he's got this stew made up. What could he do? You know, well, I mean, he could just give his brother something to eat. You know, I mean, that would be the logical thing to do, the reasonable, the rational, the good thing to do. Is to help his brother out in this situation. But notice how he takes advantage of the situation. And so he's really falling into his name really well here in the text. And we shouldn't walk away from the text without recognizing how bad this is, you know, kind of on Jacob. As he says here, "Sell me your birthright today. Sell me your birthright." It's like, you know, the value of a birthright, the value of any birthright, you know, in those ancient times, particularly the value of the birthright of the son of Isaac, who was the son of Abraham, you know, quite possibly one of the wealthiest men that were on the planet, you know, in those days. God had so blessed Abraham, and of course Isaac is his, you know, only begotten son, right? And by that I mean he is the unique son. He is the son of promise. We know that Abraham had other children, but the scriptures refer to Isaac as the only begotten. All right, even though Ishmael was born first, even in the book of Hebrews, Isaac is called the only begotten of Abraham. And so we have this this birthright is of tremendous value, because what is the difference between someone who has the birthright and the other children in the family? Exactly.
I think we see, there are so many things you can get out of this. When you look at Rebecca, the wisdom of Rebecca, and
yeah.
God had told her in 23 that there's going to be two nations in here. What if that birthright had remained intact? Where would we have been? You wouldn't have gone through the true line of the lineage of Abraham, through Isaac, and through Judah, which the Lord came from.
That's right.
And talk about a supplanter, which means took over his heel.
Yeah.
We get this. Jacob seems like an evil man.
Yeah.
Not only did he steal his brother's birthright, but he stole his father's blessings,
mm-hmm.
which belonged to Esau. And later, two or three more chapters over, we're going to see that he took it from his father-in-law.
Yeah, that's true.
In all honesty, Esau was a better person. He was more honest. And he was more trustworthy.
Yeah.
So you got to worry about that. Then when you get over to really see the plan of God, when you get over verse 28 through 32, the two main events that happened in his life, and I don't want to go that far, but talk about him wrestling with an angel.
Yeah.
And there was a big, great event there that, well, let's say Jacob grew up. I think that's where he really matured on that. And then you had the river of Jabbok,
Yeah.
What took place there. So at this point, Jacob looks like a bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely grown well into that name that of Jacob and the one who is grabbing at the heel and causing the other to stumble. And this is exactly what he does in this situation. This is a day of stumbling for Esau. And Jacob takes advantage of it. And so he causes his brother to stumble that day in selling the birthright. As I said, this comes with such a tremendous amount of wealth, because this is by no means a poor family. This is a very wealthy family, a family of great riches, a family of, they've got servants, and they've got an army of servants. They have so much. These things that Isaac would have inherited from Abraham, and I'm sure it would have continued to grow and as God has blessed them. And the birthright, affords a double portion of everything, And so in terms of monetary value, it's worth a lot more than a bull's stew. Go ahead. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, and that goes along with what Brother Doyle was pointing out is the one who had the birthright is the one who's going to be the patriarch of the family, and that's the one we'd be watching closely in terms of that promise of the promised land, because who gets the promised land is going to be that individual with the birthright. Of course, all this is according to the plan and will of God that it would take place in this way, but nevertheless we see that this significant moment, the fall of Esau, we could say, where he was tripped up once again, and he fell greatly to the point in which. It's such a significant moment that his name is changed, and he is named after the stew that he fell for. He's named after that lentil stew. So, it's funny that these Edomites, we talked about this some last week, quite a bit last week, so I won't talk a lot about it, but, the Edomites, they dwelt in what would be known as the land of Edom, and that was a red land. That was a very red in color land. All the stone, the mountains, all of that was, there's just a very bright red area. So that's another fascinating connection there with this idea of Edom and red. So Esau says, verse 32, look, I'm about to die, so what is this birthright to me? So, you know, we've kind of talked about how terrible this is on Jacob, asking for the birthright in exchange for the stew. There's, you cannot compare the two by any means. The birthright is of supreme value. So, but on the flip side of this, let's just talk about Esau for a moment. When he says, look, I'm about to die, what is this birthright to me? So here, you know, it's Esau's making a tremendous mistake in his mind here as well with saying, this birthright's nothing to me, you know? And so he's only living for the moment. See, the birthright refers to the future, and certainly it did basically pretty much nothing for him that, you know, that day, but it would be of ridiculous value in the future. And he's not thinking of future. He is thinking only of the present. He's thinking of satisfying his current desire, all right? And that current desire was that stew, was for his belly to be full. And so he cared nothing about the greater value and riches of the future. And so that's going to be an issue, and that's certainly a talking point that we find in the book of Hebrews. Go ahead.
You made a good point there. He very casually took his birthright. Okay. To the Hebrews, that was everything.
Oh, yeah.
But when you look at verse 29, and he said he came in from the field and he was weary, well, he was a skillful hunter. And his father recognized that, and that's why his father favored him over Jacob. So it kind of looks like he was lazy because he wouldn't go out and get his own gift.
Yeah, you know, this isn't a stew made of game, and it was in fact a lentil stew. So there's definitely no animals to be found here at this time. Yeah.
Who would be the firstborn, in essence.
Yeah, who would ultimately have that title. Exactly. And that's what Paul deals with in Romans chapter 9, is when he talks about this God's selection, and he points out that it is not because one was better than the other. And, you know, in fact, as God is talking to Rebekah here, they're still in the womb. You know, Paul says, before either of them had ever done any good or any evil, the selection was made. So it wasn't a matter of merit that God chose the lineage to come through Jacob. Yes, the birthright. The birthright. And the birthright is is a interchangeable a title, you know, certainly. And we're first made aware of that in this situation, as that birthright could change hands from Esau to Jacob. We see it later as well when Reuben he loses the title of firstborn. He loses that privilege and that birthright, because You know, he couldn't keep his hands to himself without going too into detail with it all. But at any rate, and so Jesus has this title as well, you know, in Colossians, and he's called the firstborn over all creation, and it's the idea that, you know, he is the supreme, he is the preeminent, he is the heir. It's playing off of all of these concepts of the only begotten Son idea, so the term applied to Jesus, the firstborn over all creation, we know from plenty of other scriptures that definitely doesn't mean that he was actually born or created or anything like that, but that he's God and always has been God and always will be. But it is, in fact, a title that was granted to him because of his supremacy over, as it says, over all of the creation. And so he wears that title. And that's what we're having here. We're having whoever holds this title, whoever has this birthright, this title of firstborn, you don't have to be the actual firstborn. You can hold that title, and you have the supremacy in the family. So, let's look just for a moment. I referenced Hebrews over Hebrews chapter 12. It points this out about Esau as. The writer of Hebrews, at this point in chapter 12, he's talking about talking to the Christians about becoming stronger spiritually and more mature. And he points out in verse 14 to pursue peace with all people and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord, looking carefully lest anyone fall short of the grace of God. Lest any root of bitterness springing up cause trouble, and by this many become defiled. Lest there be in any fornicator or profane person like Esau, who for one morsel of food sold his birthright. For you know that afterward, when he wanted to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place for repentance, though he sought it diligently with tears. So, you know, stay here in Hebrews for just a moment, and let's consider some of these things. Esau, to the Christian now, stands as an example to us as Christians. He says, don't be like Esau. You know, Esau is called here a profane person. Other translations say unholy and profane, similar ideas, but the fact is, Esau did not properly count and value that birthright. And we notice, as the writer of Hebrews pointed out, later on he does, but in that moment and in that day, he disregarded it. You know, it was not set apart for him. It wasn't a sacred thing for him. It was, and so he profaned it. It was unholy to him, and he rejected it in order to have one morsel of food. I want us to notice that this is exactly what God would have us not be. Go back to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11 talks about Abraham, and it also talks about Moses, talks about plenty of others. But think about Abraham for just a second. God told Abraham what in the very beginning? He said, leave your father's household. You know, leave your inheritance. Now, we don't know if Abraham was firstborn in title. We don't know that he'd receive a double portion, but Abraham was told to leave those treasures behind. Leave his portion of the inheritance and what have you behind. And God says, go to a place, go to a foreign place, a place of which I will tell you. What does Abraham do? He gets up, he goes. You know, but notice Moses is specifically mentioned here in Hebrews 11. He is the exact opposite of Esau. Notice in verse 23, it says, by faith Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents because they saw that he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's command. By faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. So you look here at Moses, it points out several times here. Number one, he refused to be called Pharaoh's, the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He refused that title. He refused that honor. He chose to suffer affliction rather than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. You see the opposite with Esau, right? Where Esau chose the pleasure of the flesh, right? The pleasure of satisfying his current hunger that day. And he looked at that, he esteemed that as greater. He esteemed the pleasure of the flesh greater than the riches of being the firstborn, those treasures. Notice the opposite with Moses. He esteemed the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. So Moses had it well for himself. He lived in the palace. He was the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He had riches, he had treasure, he had all these things. But these are fleeting things, you know. These are things of the moment. And the writer of Hebrews is pointing out here that Moses was looking at the future treasures, the treasures of Christ, the treasures of salvation. That's the things that he had on his mind. Esau is the exact opposite. He was looking at that day. He was looking at the treasure of that morsel of food. The fleeting pleasures of sin is what he had in mind, instead of looking at what is to come in the future and the great riches of that and the importance of that firstborn birthright. So we see that Esau, he is not like Abraham. He's not like Father Abraham. He's not like Moses. These guys were always looking at the future. These guys, they had incredible vision, incredible eyesight as to what was to come. And they could see it clearly. In fact, also there in Hebrews 11, it points out that Moses could see him who was invisible, you know. And that's the kind of eyesight that he had. He had a sight of faith. His faith was so concrete, it was pretty much literally visible to him, you know, as he walked the earth. And Abraham's the same way. These guys, they're all about the future and not the present pleasures of earth. So notice back in Genesis 25 now, the end of Genesis 25, it says in verse 34, and Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils, then he ate and drank, arose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. And, you know, why do you think it describes it in this way, that he ate, he drank, he arose, he went his way? That's a lot of descriptive words as far as what's going on. What does any of this matter? Well, I can only see it myself one way. It is the fact that, you know, it was not phasing him. Now, later on, he's going to be very upset about this. And that, you know, the writer of Hebrews talks about that. We read that just a second ago. But here, this fourfold idea here of he ate, he drank, he arose, he went his way, and then it says, thus Esau despised his birthright. It's the whole process of it, you know. Now, of course, he despised his birthright by eating and drinking. But the description, I think, is all the more fascinating when he ate, he drank, he arose, and he went his way. He went on as he's done. This shows here the full exodus from the birthright. He was fine here to just walk away from it. I think that's what the writer intends for us to see with that kind of narration there in the text.
Eating and drinking and taking in marriage and not giving much thought to spiritual things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So this is... Yeah, exactly. He's not seeing the value, and the idea that he rose up, he went his way. That again, the description here is he's not hurting over this. Now later on, he'll be mad about it. But you know, he's not hurting over this decision. He went his way, and as Brother Randy pointed out, he's just not seeing the value. You know, not now, not yet. He is not seeing the value of what he has lost. So, as we come now to chapter 26, in verse 1, wants to see something interesting here. It says, there was a famine in the land besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar. Now, here we have the narration. There's a famine in the land. And it's notice the specific that is given about the famine. This is not the first famine. Okay? So as you and I are reading this, as the original readers were reading this, you know, all the way through, they had seen a famine, and I mean, obvious, this couldn't be the same famine. I mean, you want to talk about the famine that was very early on in Abraham's day, rather. And you know, Abraham has gone through many years, and now he is dead and buried, and you know, now Isaac is 60 years old, and he has Jacob and Esau at 60 years old, and now Jacob and Esau are adults. And now it says there's a famine in the land. Of course, it's not the same famine. But number one, I guess, just to make no mistakes, the text says this is not the first famine. The first famine that was in the days of Abraham. Number two, I think the real reason why it says there was a famine in the land besides the first famine in the days of Abraham, I think the reason for that little point of narration there is for us to draw connection between this famine and Abraham's famine, because there's some interesting similarities here between Abraham's famine and Isaac's famine. And there's a great deal of similarities. And you see, Isaac, he kind of plays it out all over again. He kind of makes a lot of the same mistakes that Abraham had made during that famine long ago. So remember, when there was the famine in Abraham's day, it was immediately after God told him, I'm going to be with you. I'm going to bless you. And how fascinating is that, that after God tells him, I'm going to bless you, there's famine. You know, the opposite, you know, description of blessings. It's a test, you know. God has made promises to Abraham, and now something is laid before him to shake that up. And I think on a lot of accounts, Abraham failed that test. He was very immature at that time. And it wasn't a good time for Abraham, you know. What did he do? He goes down to Egypt. Oh, you know, Egypt, that is symbolic here in throughout Genesis. Egypt is symbolic of the world. Don't go to the world, go to God. Don't, you know, the world doesn't have anything to offer you. Go to God. You know, God blessed Abraham. God says, I will bless you. There's a famine in the land. Who cares? God said he's going to bless me. No, Abraham, you know, he goes. He goes to the world. He goes to Egypt to receive sustenance. So we have that. And then what does he do? He lies about his wife. You know, he says of Sarah, this is my sister. You know, she ends up getting, you know, taken by Pharaoh. It's terrible. Then that happens later on with King Abimelech of the Philistines. So there's going to be a lot of similarities to this here, reading in chapter 26. So Isaac, notice what happens with the famine. He gets up and he leaves. He goes, it says, to Abimelech, king of the Philistines in Gerar. Let's see, we're about out of time. So don't want to read too much further. But, you know, if you want to spend some more time with this, you know, go back and read that account with Abraham and that famine, and then read this chapter as well, and just kind of look at some of the interesting things, the things that God says, the things that Abraham does, and Isaac seems to follow suit. It's really fascinating. So we'll talk about some of those connections and, you know, what some of this all represents here next week. Appreciate your attention and comments this evening.